Game on 2FM with Green Farm. B vitamins equal big benefits. The new Green Farm added benefits range is packed with essential B vitamins. Available in store now.
Game on, weeknights from 6
on 2FM.
Yes, a big thank you to the two Johnnies for another entertaining afternoon. It is Thursday, the 26th of May. I'm Shane Dawson, and you're listening to Game On. Coming up this evening, Dundalk legend Brian Gartland on the highs and lows of playing in the League of Ireland, acting and pillow talk with Stephen Kenny.
Here's the corner for Duffy. And there's the second goal. And it's Brian Gartland, who does it so often, who's done it again.
Well, that's textbook of Dundalk. We said that, you know, the dangers on the corner kicks, especially this man, Gartland.
In rugby, Bernard Jackman goes in-depth on the Champions Cup finals as we edge closer to Leinster v La Rochelle. Plus, in our Eye on America, Jeff Shepherd profiles the NBA head coach and moral compass, that is, Steve Kerr.
I'm tired. I'm so tired of getting up here and offering condolences to devastated families that are out there. I'm so tired of the, excuse me, I'm sorry. I'm tired of the moments of silence. Enough.
Hard words from Steve Kerr, and needed words also. If you want to get in touch, you can do so by texting us on 51552 or tweet at GameOn2FM.
GameOn2FM.
Yes, hello there. It is great to have your company wherever you are tuning in from on this Thursday evening. Before we get in to the chat with Brian Gartland, a couple of news headlines to bring you. Team Ireland had three boxers in action today at the Men's European Championships. There was disappointment for Eugene McKeever, who was defeated by his Serbian opponent. Luke Maguire was defeated 3-2 on split decision by his Georgian opponent. And unfortunately, no joy for Jack Marley. His fight was stopped just into the second round because of a cut over Jack's eye. Rory McIlroy has confirmed he will not play this year's Irish Open at Mount Juliet. He will, however, be teeing it up in Ireland this summer as he has opted to take part in the JP McManus Pro-Am at Adair Manor the week after the Irish Open before taking another week off ahead of the Open at St Andrews. And in rugby, Ulster have confirmed that Ireland internationals Jack McGrath and Sean Reedy are among five senior players departing at the end of the season. The pair will move on from Ravenhill along with Mick Kearney, David O'Connor and Ross Kane. So, Shinné for the news, and I'm delighted to say, Brian Gartland is in studio. Brian, how are you, sir?
I was good until this afternoon, and you decided to tweet.
Let's get the social media elephant out of the room. So for anyone tuning in that hasn't seen the tweet on my Twitter, S Dawson Sports, actually retweeted by Game On, so it'll be more easily accessible there at Game On Twitter, was Brian Gartland starring, what year was this? When was it? A good few years ago.
Starring 10 years ago or so.
Starring in an advert for Wynn's Hotel. And, I mean, listen, it's classic acting. The author of... Listen, well, we do
generous.
have... we do have to say, so you're here, you have a book out with Mark McCann, One Last Shot. And Mark, I was actually on to Mark earlier and he mentioned the acting in it because there's the ad, there's Fair City, there's Love Hate... And there's an RTE opener many years ago by Eamon Donoghue for the first game in the new Lansdowne Road?
Yeah, the Aviva, yeah.
Okay. So, listen, I had to get it out there, but credit must go to our broadcast coordinator, Laurie Davis, for somehow unearthing this footage. I don't know how she does
it. Even I couldn't find it for the last few years. I was trying to show the in-laws there for the crack and couldn't dig it out. Got on to a couple of people, they couldn't get it and they were to do with the production, so okay. Yeah, fair play to her.
Okay, well, it's out there now on Twitter until the production company get on to take us down now for rights. But no, listen, fair play, it's out there now anyway, and David Snade texted me earlier, regular contributor to the show, being like, how on earth? And I've asked Laura Lee twice already and she hasn't answered me, so listen, it is out there now. On a serious note, the book's out, One Last Shot with Mark McCadden. It's done really well the last couple of weeks. It was top of the charts, and it's a great venture. It's not something we're used to seeing in the League of Ireland, I suppose. I know John Caulfield has one out as well, but in terms of how it came about with Mark, I know Mark, he's a really good guy. How did it come about? When was it first mooted, and why did you do it?
It was Liam Hayes with Hero Books, small publisher, and they do a lot of GAA books, Game of Your Life and stuff like that. And he decided he wanted to get into the League of Ireland, and there's no League of Ireland books, so I think John was their first one, and he thought after the Dundalk and Cork rivalry, it'd be good to get Dundalk side of it. So listen, he might have approached one or two others beforehand, I'm not sure, but when he approached me, it was 2019, so it was nearly 3 years ago.
Okay.
And I said no, because it wasn't the done thing, it wasn't the League of Ireland player thing. What would the lads say? Sure, who'd buy it?
Yeah.
You know, that sort of stuff. And
were you self-conscious about it then?
Oh, in terms completely.
Of, because
completely.
It's very open, and I do want to touch on that, but in terms of, like, it's... You're revealing yourself to the world, you're having to be open and honest with Mark, who... I assume you didn't know that well beforehand?
Yeah, that was part of it, because I said no, and then Liam asked me to meet him, and I sat down and met him and said, worth hearing him out, and he gave me plenty of reasons, and a few of them, you know, stuck with me. And I have a couple of businesses, so it's good, obviously, publicity, if it comes out well from it, and that sort of has a profile for that, gets them maybe a bit more notice. But the main thing was, I'm always encouraging the younger players the last few years and stuff, step out of your comfort zone, do stuff. And I thought to myself, that was, you know, I'm taking the easy way out here. And the other thing is League of Ireland, I'm giving out the whole time. They don't do enough promotion. We don't get enough exposure. We don't do so. A bit hypocritical if I turn around and don't try and do my part for it.
Mm.
So I wanted to show the League of Ireland in a normal light, and that's why I've said if I'm doing it, everyone says it's very open and honest, and there was no point doing it if I didn't do it that way. I saw it was wasted, because you're always going to say what if or leave something out.
Yeah. No, it is, and I think it's a book that, I am a League of Ireland fan, I'm a Shelburne fan, but I think for even people that wouldn't have an interest in League of Ireland, that might just be a casual sports fan as such, that it's wide-ranging. We talk about the acting and kind of doing something different from League of Ireland, but even the intricacies to the rivalry with Cork that we will get to, and everything that goes with it. But in terms of how you thought other people would react, and I didn't want to talk about the sports side of things, but I mean, from the very start, for someone that might pick this up and be like, oh, that's Brian, longest serving player for Dundalk, you know, played in Europa League and a legend of the League of Ireland. But you dive straight in with Mark. I mean, the prologue mentions your father's passing, and that's when I thought, oh, okay. And then the very first sentence is, I was 15 years old when Mam and Dad separated. Bernard Gartland was a drinker. He had problems with depression. I mean, that's so open at the start. And listen, I'm a nobody. Nobody wants to hear my story, but I come from a single parent household, and I'd find it so difficult to talk about that and so difficult to put that into words. And you start off the book with that. I mean, that's totally different. Was that a conscious decision you made to say, I want something that it isn't necessarily about sports straight away?
No, all credit to that goes to Mark. Mark, like I said, it was his first book, and I knew Mark, we knew each other, but
yeah,
not that well. And he became my therapist, I suppose, when you go into that sort of stuff. But he's done an incredible job with it. I was delighted with how it came out, and it got my words across, because it's very hard to transcribe someone's thoughts and feelings and everything.
Mm.
You know, I might say something and two people could be there and hear a completely difference. But Mark has nailed a lot of it. And when I got the first edit across, I suppose, of the first bit, it was like that. I liked it, and I liked what he did with it, because everyone sees you as the footballer.
Mm.
It's just a footballer. And like you say, you come from a single parent. And I thought when I was that age, I was like, why me? You know, why am I in a house like this? Or why do you have to deal with this? But as I got older, I remember thinking, this is normal. You know, it was so common with divorce in houses, I suppose, especially in the 2000s, you know, late 90s, going into 2000s.
And yeah,
it became a lot more common. And as you got older, I realised that. And things like that, they are what they are. That was your life. And it's nothing groundbreaking, or it's nothing life-shattering. That's my story. And it's only part of my story. We had loads of great times, you know. But
yeah,
that was a mega, mega event, I suppose, that created me and my emotions. And it's probably those hard times that have got me through you know, create the resilience in me, and it can always be worse, and you have to get on with things, sort of thing. So that shaped my life going forward and my personality as well.
Did that make you stronger in terms of your leadership? You're a captain of Dundalk, you lead a dressing room and such, having the responsibility on yourself and your brother as well growing up, because you were always an able athlete as well. I'm sure you were always kind of top of the, when people are picking teams, you're probably always up there, be it in football, in Gaelic games or in basketball, that those experiences outside of sport build the character of who you are on the pitch.
Yeah, I think outside sports and growing up really builds the character. Like, my mother, I talk about her in the book, like her resilience going through tough times, and she ended up director of Littlewoods for I don't know how many years, and she worked from the bottom up to that role, and while going through this at home that no one would know about and stuff like that. So without knowing at the time, like, it's an example set for me, and you know, you just have to get on with it, because you know, life goes on outside your door. So yeah, I think everything outside football and everything growing up will shape a person in some way, and all the people that are in their life will shape them. Like I said, examples, just people rub off on people, especially on the kids. So yeah, so that's why I think it sort of was a real moulding experience, and I'm hoping that's, you know, made me better for that, like I say, resilient, and have a bit of leadership and take things by the scruff of the neck in football like I had to in outside life.
Mm. No, I genuinely, it struck me when I was reading it, I thought it was beautiful, a beautiful opening, and I mean that sincerely. I'm not trying to be melodramatic or it's not hyperbole or anything of the like. Growing up then, you didn't just play football. Obviously people know you as the footballer, but you have a strong, keen interest in basketball and Gaelic games for Ballyboden, St. Enda's. So is there a case that in a different world I could be sitting here talking to Dublin footballer Brian Gartland or NBA export Brian Gartland, or was it always just going to be soccer?
No, I think it was always going to be soccer, and that was recognised. I probably held a bit of a grudge against a couple of coaches when I was younger because, you know, didn't get a fair crack of the whip. Maybe at a certain thing, or should have been into the Dublin Development Panel or the Ireland team in the basketball. But as I grew up, and like I said, even doing the book, you recognise when you're older then that they knew football was my love, my first love. It was my dedication and trying to be a Premier League footballer. So when I did get to the competitive thing and the clashes, football was always picked over Gaelic and basketball. But like, most Saturdays would be three different matches, you know, when I was 10, 11, 12, 13 years old. You go from one match to the other to the other.
Yeah.
And absolutely loved it. Every sport, but especially those basketball and Gaelic as well, yeah.
Well, let's talk about what you're, I suppose, most known for, and that is playing for Dundalk. And you touched on earlier there a few moments ago, the rivalry. And let's just dive straight into it, because the League of Ireland hasn't had a really proper rivalry. It's always been kind of friendly rivalries, and yeah, we'd have to go back to even Pat Dolan, Ollie Byrne days, or maybe so when they had an actual bite into it. But I was struck by one of the paragraphs in it in terms of being the leader for Dundalk, and a few Cork City fans were politely offended. You're a brave man offending anyone from Cork in the first place, to be honest with you, Brian, let alone put it down in words. But one of the paragraphs in it was, 1 year after we put the League of Ireland on the map, after we showed not only the country but Europe that an Irish team could compete by playing an attractive brand of football, Cork City long balled their way to the league and FAI Cup double. Ouch. As far as I was concerned, the shine was taken off our double a couple of years earlier. If a team like this could do the double, I thought, is it really that big of an achievement? Cork had their own way, it was effective, but it wasn't pretty. But that's football, and there are many ways to win a game. So there's a bit of bite in that, and I wonder, is the style of football important to you?
Yeah, it is. And especially after Stephen Kenny. Because like I said, people mould you. And Stephen Kenny's moulded me for the last 10 years in terms of what I think of football and how I like it to be played. Like, I talk about a time in the book when we're keeping the ball and we go across and across and across. And it was in training, and Stephen goes mad. And he goes, and we go, we're keeping it. We're not letting them have it. And he goes, you're 2, 3, 4 opportunities to go forward. Attack, attack, attack. He'd shout that in the dressing room, attack, attack, attack. And little bits like that would stick in my head. Like, and that's the basics. That's, we were possession and keeper. But when you had the chance, when that opening arrives, forward, attack. People are here to be entertained. He'd say that in the dressing room. So yeah, so we loved winning, but we loved winning playing that style of football and playing entertaining style of football. Like, listen, the players I played with, they were magic. You know, they such talent. So listen, I just give it to them. I do my defensive job and know my strengths, and I give it to the lads that were pure technical ability and flair. But yeah, it did come in, and that was my thoughts at the time in terms of Cork. Listen, they changed a bit after that, and I say that in the book. I think it might be their downfall a little bit, because they were so good at what they did. They got the better of us then in terms of the long ball, and then when they did pick up the seconds, they had electric players in terms of Dooley, Beattie, Jimmy Keohane would have been there. Sean McGuire was a nuisance.
Yeah.
He was, his goals that year were ridiculous. He was gone halfway through. So listen, I'm sure Cork fans were excited watching them at the time, because it was entertaining for them. They were attacking as well.
And they were winning.
Yeah, and they were winning. I think they went 21 out of 22 the first games and something like that. So, yeah, a few people weren't happy with it. But listen, if, like I said, football's opinions, there's many ways to win a game.
There was a bit of bite on a trip that both Cork and Dundalk were away, and it's detailed in the story. But I wonder, is this the sort of rivalry that, there was a genuine bit of bite, but would you be friendly with any of the players now? And I ask that in mind with, if you cast your mind back to the Dublin Meath GA rivalry and how that 91, the saga, and it was proper and his lads just thumping each other on the pitch. Yes, I was chatting to Charlie Redmond recently enough, and he was kind of saying, we meet up for a golf tournament now every year, and it's the Dublin and Meath sides, and they had a dinner in the Mansion House back in the 90s as well, and they're like really good friends now. Now, I know time has passed, but in terms of now, would there still be a bit of animosity between certain Dundalk and Cork players, or would it be just all forgotten about and friendly now?
No, not one bit. The same, it's on the pitch, and I think that's healthy, that's the way it should be. Like, Marco Sullivan, myself and himself used to batter each other, we kick lumps, and even in the game we turn around and laugh for a little high five and you could be chatting, but once the ball was there to be won, that was it. Off the pitch, I'd love to go for a pint with him. He seemed like a great fella, lovely fella, and that's the way it would be. There's other lads that were playing for Cork then, and you see them now and you chat away, and it's a respect, you know. You hated each other then on the pitch. They were stopping you from achieving, or trying to stop you from achieving what you wanted, and that was a battle, and you had to deal with it. And that rivalry, that sort of grudge, is brilliant. Like, you think back to Arsenal and United in the Premier League, and we say, why don't we have that now? You just don't have that. Like, you don't have to be all smiles and rosy with them on the pitch. You can be, like I say, competitive like that. And then when you roll off the pitch, it's, listen, fair play, you won or I won, whatever it is that day, and we'll go again in a couple of months.
Shake hands and get on with it. Pictures of watching Sky Sports and whatever else in Premier League of players hugging and chatting and laughing in the dressing room before you go out, and it shouldn't be the way, but I wouldn't say the League of Ireland's that way, to be fair. And perhaps that's what's unique about the authenticity of our league. You mentioned there when you're talking about Stephen Kenny that even in the dressing room he said, we want to play entertaining football, or this is about entertainment. Was that always the mantra of Stephen Kenny, regardless of who you were playing?
Yeah. With, obviously, you know, intent, if you have to change your play a little bit, obviously if you're going out in Europe.
Mm.
But even that in Europe, and listen, in our heads, we were probably questioning it sometimes. So you're going, Preston, we're going to play in Bate, or we're going to play in Zenit St. Petersburg, and we're going all out on the press and leaving ourselves 1v1 and exposed, or 2v2 and leaving space in our half, which is kind of unheard of. And even in ourselves, we'd be saying,
Was it hard to buy into then?
No, because at that stage, listen,
you'd go to war for Stephen.
Yeah, and everything he touched was golden. And he just gave you this belief, and he gave you, you know, with the instruction, this belief of, you are capable. Like, that's only a different name on his jersey compared to yours. And we used to have the sort of mantra, go out there, it's 11v11, it doesn't matter about the 30 million he's getting that year in wages, you know, or everything in the background at that scale. But then at the same time, when it came back to the league here, no matter who you were playing, top or bottom, it was, everything was orchestrated to, I suppose, manipulate your mind to have you up for it and get you up for a game. And I talk about attacking play and entertaining people. Like, that was reiterated to our wingers over and over and over again, because we were blessed with great wingers like Daryl Horgan and Mickey Duffy under them, and you know, crowds loved them. They're just so exciting to watch. I loved watching them when I was sitting at the back. But Stephen would be pushing that. Obviously, it's result orientated as well. But yeah, he's one of a kind that way.
In terms of influences on your game and you as a person, from a sporting side of life, I'm assuming Stephen would be right up there. Who else would be up there in terms of advice that you've been given over the years?
There was a coach when I was younger, Alan McGovern. He was an FAI coach, but at Knockline United. He was, I think, brother-in-law of the coach that we had, and he was coaching us, and he would have moulded me at that age in terms of all my defensive organisation and stuff like that. It was, yeah, I owed a lot to him. I followed, he got a job over in Verona in Blanchardstown then, and I followed him there just because he went, leaving Leicester Celtic, and I used to spend, I think the M50 was getting redone. I used to spend about an hour and a half to 2 hours from school on the south side, going over, go training, then back 2-3 nights a week. But yeah, he would have taught me so much. The likes of Mick Cook gave me great belief as well, you know, backed me. And I suppose in sport, like, I can go into all my coaches, because the other sports, the likes of basketball and Gaelic, especially basketball, in terms of learning plays, tactical stuff, screens, especially sitting screens, you know, for set plays, for corners and stuff like that, and just movements. And I think doing that from a young age, my head was just coordinated that way. It would, you know, it would think in a certain way because of that sport. So I've had a lot of people in sport that way. Jerry O'Brien was a principal in my primary school, and he did breakfast basketball at 8 o'clock every day before school for 6 years. So I'm, you know, 5 hours a week with him every week for 6 years. And that was for nothing. That was just for the kids to play. So there's so many people I owe, you know, over a life. That's I'm probably leaving out some as well. Like,
that's natural.
You can go. And then the ones that, you know, I talk about Dermot Keely in the book. I spent a year playing under him, and it wasn't my most enjoyable year, but I would have learned so much. So from even the people that, you know, you think you didn't like or didn't enjoy, you still, it's a big learning curve, especially as a young athlete.
You mentioned the people that influenced you, and you mentioned in the book about visualization techniques. So the night before the game, you imagine all the set pieces, the goals, keeping a clean sheet, etc. How does that come about? Was that something that was advised to you, or like, I doubt that's something you just wake up one morning and say, I'm going to start doing this now.
No, and it wasn't a motivational thing. It just sort of happened. Yeah, it probably goes back to, you were at the game, Shelburne against Kildare. It'd be my first competitive game for Shelburne, and first league debut, and just visualising scoring in front of our crowd. It was a new era for Shelburne. Shelburne's a massive club, and obviously, you know, a lot had happened in the off season, and I was just thinking, right, imagine scoring in front of that crowd. It's every little boy's dream. I don't know, 19 maybe at the time or so, and it's every kid's dream to grow up playing football. Listen, you're visualising it first of all when you're young in the Premier League and for Liverpool and my team and stuff like that. But it just happened that I'd be going to bed dreaming of what I want to happen the next day, and I suppose it sort of happened that night.
Yeah,
and I scored 13 minutes in, and I just always continued that ever since, just sort of visualisation of positive things rather than negative things. A couple of times in my career, I suppose the negative thoughts came in, and you know, has the opposite effect. So you learn as you go and as you experience, and I try to manipulate my own psychology.
Your time at Shelburne then, so that match you're referring to was a 2-2 draw with Kildare County in 2007, and that was the first game of, I say, the new Shelburne era. Dermot Keely had to put together a team on a very shoestring budget, and Shelburne were very close to going out of existence. And if you talk to many Shelburne fans, people will talk about the European days, more recently the promotion in Drogheda. But I think genuinely that match is probably a lot of people's favourite match, because they still knew. I think on extra time, I said there were 1,600 at it. I think it was a lot less, to be honest with you. But it was at that time that they knew they still had a club. So you scored the goal for a new era. But you mentioned Dermot Keighley, and tough love, I suppose, is the phrase that would spring to mind. You mentioned about hating him, or coming away hating him from the experience at Shells. So the good, positive influence you had, how difficult was it to play under Dermot at the time and to turn that into a positive aspect for yourself?
Yeah, it was difficult. We'd all a young team, like you say, it was a shoestring budget, so it was kind of like a lot of young players taken from other clubs, from other under 21 teams. And Dermot was a different generation. Dermot's one of the most decorated players, managers, and, you know, up in Dundalk, he's a hero up there from, you know, his playing days. But I suppose it was a clash of generations. You had this new generation coming in that they don't take the tough love. You know, it was more arm around the shoulder and Billy Modley calling.
Do you prefer that management?
No, I think, listen, I think you need a bit of everything.
Okay.
I think you need a mix, and I think every player needs a different mix, and it's different times, they need different things, and players sometimes mightn't respond to the tough love, but it's what they need, because they need to toughen up.
Okay.
And I think it was a great learning curve for me, because, you know, like I said, with other stuff, you sink or swim, you just have to get on with it. That's life. Take it, or else it's not for you. So you learn to roll with the punches, to take the hard bits, and then Dermot brought in other players, and I didn't play much in the second half of the season. But you learn. You're involved the whole time, you learn, and you see how other people react to it as well when you sort of step back from it, but still in the environment. I came away sort of with a disliking for Dermot because of it. But that was me young and thinking the there and now. As you grow older, you think back and you appraise everything, and you look at things and say, well, listen, it's probably done me well. So and the league was a tough league then. You know, it was a lot more physical. Young players.
First division.
First division as well. It wasn't about football. It was about being solid, not being bet, not conceding goals, and you'll get a goal. And, you know, I had a lot of naivety that way, thinking, listen, come in and play football and
see what happens.
But yeah, it was a different story. But I still played plenty of games, so I got a bit of experience that way, and then a lot of experience from the other side. I met Dermot 10 years later on the bus going from Dundalk to Dublin.
Okay.
And we sat for the hour or hour and a half and had a chat the whole way down. It was brilliant just chatting, and, you know, all preconceived ideas. We were just talking football in Dundalk at the time and stuff like that. And you grow out of those things as you're, you know, as a kid then. So completely different. But I wanted to put in the book how, you know, mindset might be that way at one time, and then as you grow and you learn experience, you think back and you think, right, I could have been wrong there, or there was positives from it anyway.
I remember vividly from going to Shelburne matches that season, you could hear word for word Dermot Keighley shouting constructive criticism, I think, at players. But what was Stephen Kenny like when he got angry? Because I know on your 30th birthday, no less, you got a bit of a dressing down, to put it politely.
Yes, you don't want to be the wrong end of Stephen. And I think that every manager needs that. You need an element of fear. There needs to be repercussion. There needs to be, no matter what age you are, whether you're my age now or you're a new lad coming in, there has to be that element of fear, because there needs to be authority without it, I suppose, going over a line, for people to stay in check, for people to, you know, not step out of line. You're trying to manage 20-odd players. You're always going to have one or two that might be at a weak moment or a bad moment or stuff like that. So they need to have this little voice in the back of their head saying, oh, I don't want to cross him, or I don't want to, you know, get a rap.
Mm.
And, Stephen, if he's great crack, and he's, you know, brilliant character, but he can lose it. I suppose that's the other way of putting it as well. So, and he can be to the point and precise and that way, and you don't want to be on the end of it.
Okay. It can be personal, but again, constructive. Your time at Dundalk then, it's gone to unfathomable heights. There's obviously a very low point in Dundalk in its more recent history, to be fair. How enjoyable has the journey been for you? Because I know you're married, you're settled there now, your in-laws are from the area, I'm kind of right in saying. Yeah. So you are an adopted child of Dundalk now. So does that feel like home now and that's the club? Because I asked that, I suppose, with in mind that when you signed the new deal, there was a chance you might have left the club.
Yeah, that was probably 5 years ago, wasn't it? 2017, but yeah, we weren't running that well, and Cork were unbeatable for the first 6 months. Yeah, the talk was, you know, was that the end of us? Was that Dundalk sort of dynasty gone? A few lads had moved on to England and different places after. And yeah, you have to explore options because I suppose you have to look at everything on the table because it's unpredictable. You know, maybe Dundalk were going to have a better option than me. So you have to.
I doubt that.
You have to keep your things wide up. Well, the way I was playing that season, I'd say they were looking for one anyway. But yeah, I married a girl up there, Brona, and we've two kids there now. We've a house, and the parents-in-law live 8 doors down. So yeah, feet firmly under the table up there. So it's an hour up the road. I've still got my mother down here and friends down in Dublin, sort of thing. So like a lot of people, I suppose, it's commuting in and out to Dublin the whole time. But it the town's been great to me. I could never have imagined the last 10 seasons, the ups and downs.
You're the longest serving player there now in the current squad.
Yeah.
So yeah. That doesn't come by chance, put it that way. Does it feel like it's on an upward trajectory now with Stevie's back there, and given the uncertain times recently, does it feel, is the buzz back?
Yeah, it really is. I think after the last couple of years, a lot of up in the air stuff, a lot of stuff in the media that wasn't positive, there was a lot of negative connotation, you know, going around on and off the pitch. With COVID it didn't help, but the club lost its link with the community and the town, and like they really are a tight connection when it's going well, and when that connection is well, it's, you know, if the club's going well, the town's going well, it's buzzing, and you can feel that back again. And then the environment in the club, it's night and day, you know, it's the culture, the players that have come in, it's a great place to go in. You're looking forward to going in every morning, and it's smile on the face, and it's crack, and it's hard work, you know. So there's a good balance, and then there's an environment there for, we have young players in now and phenomenal talent, and their ability and potential, you know, is limitless, and they're being given an environment now where they can thrive, they can go as far as they want to go, but they have to take that opportunity, and that's what Stephen Kenny did years ago, and that's what is being created by the club and the management now. And you can see that, and I can see even just in the involvement of, say, the last 4 months since we're back into the season or so, 3-4 months, is the involvement of players. Even if I just look at the physiques, you know, it transcribes how they're living their life, how they're eating, they're not going out on the drink the whole time. They're doing gym sessions away from our own gym sessions, or they're doing whatever they have to do to better themselves. You can see all these little bits coming together. And you know, it's brilliant to see. It's brilliant to see that back. There's still so much work to go and to improve, and on and off the pitch. But once you can see some positives, you know, you're hoping it'll snowball then and keep going that direction.
How bleak were the tough times? Like how difficult? You mentioned about getting up, and there's a spring in the step, and you're going into work, you're going to train to be a footballer. But how tough was it when things were very uncertain at the club? Like, we only kind of, I assume, see half of what's really going on in the media or in the public domain, and I know there's some things I have to say in the dressing room, and that's completely fair enough, but how tough was it?
Very tough, because there was an emotion attached to it. You know, there's a lot of love from players that have been there for years, and there's this, because of all the times we've had at the town, you know, with the community, winning all those things, those experiences, you develop a connection and a bond. And when other people come in, whether it be above you, in club owners, management, players, and things aren't going well, they mightn't have that. They might just, well, you know, I'm still getting paid and so on. And that's not to say anyone is, but that's easy, because you don't have that extra bond. And then to turn it around, I suppose, is very difficult because players don't have control of that. You know, did you feel
there was an onus on you though, because you were such a leader of the group, to try and turn things around?
There's only so much one person could do. So whether it's you're a player, a manager, or whatever, if the top is broken and not functioning correctly, then it's going to seep down through everything. And that's how I see it was. Listen, this is just my opinion. And it was difficult. And you can see from all the media throughout the whole time that there was a lot of noise the whole time, negative noise. And that seeps into a dressing room, so it's very hard for the players. And then performances weren't good, so you're getting it from the fans from the other end. I suppose the tough thing was for the lads that were in the town, and there was only a few of us, that we were the only ones in the town. The chairman wasn't in the town, he was in Florida. The sporting director might have been living in Belfast, or he wasn't constantly in the town or wasn't involved with the community. So you get all the questions. You get a little bit of flack, but it's not really. It's just people saying, what's gone wrong there and what's gone this? And Jesus, that was, I won't use the language. And it's really tough to take that. So it can be quite tough mentally, because it's just how to deal with that, and it's something that I suppose you don't know if you can deal with it until it comes.
Yeah, I suppose it's all experiences. Brian Gartland, unfortunately time is against. I would love nothing more to continue chatting. Just very, very briefly, tomorrow evening's match, Dundalk Pats, the Stephen O'Donnell derby. How much are Dundalk players looking forward to that? Just very briefly, because we are very stuck for time, unfortunately.
Listen, we look forward to every game, and at the moment the lads are on a great run. They're flying. So there's lots of confidence, and it's going to be a tough game against Pats. The last day it was, draw probably was a fair result, so we're hoping we can improve on our performance against them the last day and keep this form going.
I'm sure you'll be in the hunt for a League of Ireland title in no time, Brian.
Thanks for having me on.
You're a gentleman. Listen, Brian Gartland, One Last Shot, an autobiography with Mark McCadden. As I said, I'm not just saying it because Brian is seated opposite me, but it is a great read. So it is in all good bookstores and a few non-good ones as well, I'm sure. Brian Gartland, thank you very much. Do stay with us on Game On here in 2FM, because there's lots more to come.
RTE 2FM. On 2FM with Green Farm. B vitamins equal big benefits. The new Green Farm added benefits range is packed with essential B vitamins. Available in store now.
Game On.
Rugby.
Now, you're very welcome back to Game On this evening as we turn our attention to rugby, and specifically the small matter of the Champions Cup final. It is, of course, Leinster v La Rochelle. And I'm delighted to say Bernard Jackman joins me now to have a chat about Saturday evening's final. Bernard, we've been previewing this all week. It's the talk of the town. As we near kickoff now, we've been building up to it. Who are you favouring at the moment, I suppose, overall?
Yeah, look, I think for this week, I'm trying to find a reason why Leinster wouldn't win, because they are the favourites for the right reasons. Their form has been outstanding. They're fresh. Their injury profile is pretty good. I know there's a little bit of a worry about James Lowe and Tadhg Furlong, but, Ron O'Gara has bigger injury problems in La Rochelle, full of internationals, and just look to have taken their game to a new level. And they just haven't missed a beat in the knockout stages. So very, very hard to see any result other than Leinster winning.
Ronan O'Gara has a few injury worries, or does he? The war of words and the mind games that has gone on. What have you made of it all? Because it's not something, I suppose, we're used to.
Yeah, well, look, I think genuinely Tadhg Furlong is a concern. The James Lowe news came a little bit left field. Certainly, Leo and Leinster would have been surprised by Will Skelton coming on the bench last week for Stade Francais, when all the soundings coming out of the French team's camp has been that he was gone for the season. So there probably is a little bit of mind games, but I think they'll start. Tadhg Furlong maybe mightn't start, and that could be a big blow for Leinster. Keane Healy was on the bench as a tight head last weekend against Munster and came on and looked quite good in the scrum. I know last summer they tried him out there. So maybe that's just a plan in case Tadhg Furlong pulls out, that Keane will move across to the tight head side to cover behind Michael Alatoa. But I still think, no matter who plays, you have to fancy Leinster, just in fairness, some of it's down to the league, the URC, the fact they've had such a good start in that, that they were able to rest those internationals for those 2 weeks when the younger squad went to South Africa, whereas Ron O'Gara and La Rochelle have been involved in a fight for top six. And, you know, I know they rotated some players at the weekend against Stade Francais at home, but in general, they've been going, you know, full metal jacket every week. And they look tired. They look tired in the semi-final. And they've also played all French teams in this competition in the last four rounds of it. So they're going to get exposed to a totally different type of rugby, which, let's be honest, if Leinster can do it in the final, they're changing the way the game has been played at under massive pressure.
Is it too much of a stretch to say that this team needs this European Cup, considering they've missed out in the past three seasons? They'll have no need for extra motivation, considering it was La Rochelle who dumped them out last year. But to really step up the mark of, we know how talented this group are, but to really just nail down that mark as a great, perhaps legendary team.
Yeah, no, I think they do. And I think that actually, to be honest, they'd have to go again. You know, they'd have to probably win back-to-back, win the URC this year, get that double. The double is always very hard to achieve. We know Joe Schmidt, his Leinster team, were able to accumulate trophies, you know, two European Cups. And obviously Stuart Lancaster and Leo Cullen have won. But I do think, and they know that. They know that. They expect that of themselves. Also, you know, we need to be honest that, you know, the other team's salaries caps have reduced more than Leinster's have. So, you know, realistically, Leinster should be expecting to be, I think, winning a European Cup, you know, every second year at least.
All right, I want to talk about the nuts and bolts of the match itself, and particularly the out half position. In terms of a key area and a key battle, how pivotal may that be come Saturday evening?
Look at it on form, on stature, on experience, on game management. There's no contest in this position. This is the position that Leinster have the trump card in Johnny Sexton. His form has been inspired, and in the La Rochelle team, you know, their 10, Ahea West, looks to be struggling. He had a very poor day from the boot in the semi final. His goal kicking has been a kind of weakness for him all his career. He's not in La Rochelle next year. La Rochelle didn't renew his contract. He's going to Toulon. So, you know, I think he hasn't played international rugby. You know, so Johnny Sexton has, you know, bucket loads of experience, quality, proven big game temperament. And that's the only thing for me. I think, you know, when you look back at the teams that have won European Cups, generally their 10 has been, you know, either a star, a confirmed international player, or someone who's going to go and become one. And I just don't see that in West. And I think that could be one area that's a huge advantage for Leinster.
So if Johnny does get to dictate the play, and we've seen Leinster play at such high intensity on so many occasions and prove to be successful for Leinster, will that be a case then of opposing styles, and La Rochelle might look to slow it down a bit and make it a bit more of a, not a unruly game, but a bit dirtier, a bit more intense?
Yeah, look, I think, you know, I don't know if you saw, but Ugo Mola, the Toulouse coach, came out after the defeat to Leinster and said, you know, how could they compete? The ball was in play for 40 minutes and Leinster's fitness was far superior. But, you know, Toulouse allowed that happen. You can slow the game down without breaking the rules. I mean, fine touch, you know, put the ball in the stand, limit your handling errors, you know, don't play as deep and as wide as Toulouse did. So, and I think also when you look at the profile of the La Rochelle side, you know, with centres like Sabatia, the Fijian, Dante, the French international, you know, some of their forwards, the way they carry the ball, I don't think they will go wide. I think they'll play much more direct. So the ball will be in the air for less time. It'll become more about power. And, you know, Leinster won't be able to catch the opposition as far behind the gain line defensively as they did against Toulouse. So there's lots of things that La Rochelle will have learned from that semi-final. So it mightn't be the free-flowing spectacle that we saw in the semi-final or even the first half against Leicester for that matter. But yes, I still think that, you know, Leinster will have enough ball and be able to do enough with it to build a score.
So if you are to try and fit yourself into Ronan O'Gara's head for me now, Bernard, like, what's the non-negotiable? What will Ronan be saying going out in terms of how we need to nullify such a potent attack?
Well, look, if you look back at their game against Racing, and he will be looking back at that, they were incredibly disrespectful with the ball. Through a huge amount of offloads, you know, in positions where they weren't even 50-50s or 64, you know, or 40-60s, they were 30-70s, and it led to a huge amount of turnovers, made it very hard for them to build momentum. And again, if you do that against Leinster, you won't see the ball back for 2 or 3 minutes, or if you do see it back, you'll be kicking it off after conceding a point. So I think that's the big one. I mean, and he's got so many examples from a recent game. Now, having said that, you know, that's uncharacteristic of La Rochelle. You know, Rog is famous for this KBA, keep the ball alive. They do take risks, but usually they're quite accurate with that. So, and if they get that part of the game right, it will make it very difficult for Leinster to set their defence and bring line speed, because, you know, Leinster's defence, like every good defence, is built around defending from a ruck. So that's the challenge. And you know, the reason we're probably not talking La Rochelle up as much is because on the most recent outing, that part of their game didn't function, but yet they're back in a back-to-back Champions Cup final. So they're a hell of a good side. And there is that worry that it will click for them on the day. And, you know, if it does, it's a totally different proposition for Leinster than the one we're previewing.
OK, well, it will be interesting to see which way that one goes. Bernard Jackman, thank you very much. Don't forget, you can follow Leinster v La Rochelle on Saturday at 4:45 in the Champions Cup final on the RT Sport website via a live blog and the RT News app live, or you can listen live on RTE Radio 1.
Game on.
Rugby.
RTE.
2FM.
Game on
2FM with Green Farm. Green Farm's newest chicken and turkey range is full of B vitamins, which play a vital role in maintaining good health and well-being. Available in store now.
Game on.
Eye on America.
Now, you're very welcome back to this evening's Game On as we turn our attention to US sport in the company of Jeff Shepherd, and Brian Gartland is still live in studio. Gentlemen, I want to chat basketball. However, unfortunately, it's not about the sport side of things, because Golden State Warriors coach Steve Kerr refused to talk about basketball at a pre-game news conference earlier this week and instead called for stricter gun control after the horrific scenes at the Texas school shooting. Jeff Shepherd, I want to get your thoughts on Steve Kerr's opinion and voicing his concerns. We want to hear Steve Kerr first.
Any basketball questions don't matter. Since we left shoot around, 14 children were killed 400 miles from here, and a teacher. And in the last 10 days, we've had elderly black people killed in a supermarket in Buffalo. We've had Asian churchgoers killed in Southern California. And now we have children murdered at school. When are we going to do something? I'm tired. I'm so tired of getting up here and offering condolences to the devastated families that are out there. I'm so tired of moments of silence. Enough.
Hard-hitting words, Shep. What has the reaction, I suppose, been to Steve's comments in America?
Yeah, you know, Shane, so obviously he's voicing what so many people in this country and around the world are feeling about, you know, this recent, you know, week, or I'd say week and a half in America when it comes to violence. You know, no one obviously is for anything that happened. I mean, he has a very big microphone and has the ability to voice those opinions. The thing that's the hardest part, one of the hardest parts, obviously, outside of the deaths of all these people, is there is no easy thing to do, unfortunately. The way that this country is set up and the way things are passed, if you're looking at it from the outside, you may be wondering, well, why can't they just do this? Why can't they just take the guns? Why can't they vote this? Why can't they do that? Whatever the thing is that you think it is. And that just, this country is not set up like that. You know, it just operates differently. And so, you know, there are national laws, state laws, local laws. It is just this amalgam of things that kind of all make it up. And you know, I wish there was a thing that we could do to just snap our fingers and it would all just be taken care of. But unfortunately, it's not like that. I mean, these issues are just so complex. But obviously, I mean, you know, the country kind of came to a standstill this week as this happened, you know, at a school with its young kids. There doesn't seem to be an explanation. I mean there doesn't seem to be an explanation for any of these school shootings that have happened recently. It's been a couple of years, but then this one, it just happened to be that it seems like this guy just happened to pull in this school when he was running from the cops after allegedly killing his grandmother earlier in the day, and he got into the school, and then obviously this, you know, what was already a terrible situation just became, you know, a tragedy.
Yeah, it's certainly absolutely horrific, Shep. I suppose it's a bit inconsequential, but Steve Carrick wouldn't talk about the sporting side of things, but the Golden State Warriors do have a match to look forward to and to try and focus on.
Yeah, so, you know, this is all set against the backdrop of, you know, the NBA playoffs. And it is inconsequential, but it is also what his job is and what, you know, we're here to talk a little bit about today. Yeah, I mean, the Warriors are up 3-1 in the Western Conference Finals. Look, they win tonight against Dallas. They go to the finals for the sixth time in 8 years. I mean, that's unbelievable. You know, we saw LeBron James go, what was that, 8-9 years in a row between, you know, Cleveland and Miami and back to Cleveland again. You know, the Warriors obviously have been a wonderful dynasty, you know, since the middle part of the 20 teens. And Steph Curry and Draymond Green, I mean, they know how to win. They've you know, had other players come in, Kevin Durant, obviously, and, you know, win championships. But they right now seem to be the best team remaining of the Final Four. And you've got the Celtics up over the Miami Heat in the East. 3-2, so you could potentially see, you know, both series get closed out in the next couple of days.
Okay, Jeff Shepherd, thank you very much for the Eye on America. Unfortunately, that is all we have time for. A host of texts in. Brian Gartland up Tro, just one very quick to you. What League of Ireland manager would you have liked to play under that you haven't?
We'll say Roddy.
There you go.
I left a month early, so
one word answer. Brian Gartland, thank you so much for popping into studio to chat to us this evening. Graeme Smith is up next, so do stay tuned to 2FM. But from all of the Game On team, it's bye for now.
RTE 2FM. Game On 2FM with Green Farm. Green Farm's new added benefits range is enriched with all your B vitamins, which are essential for your health and well-being. Available in store now.